Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to What's Right with Men, a weekly radio program dedicated to exploring and discussing what it means to be a man in a post-feminist world. Now here are your hosts, John Freeman and Roger Wetzel.
Well, good afternoon and good evening, and welcome to the show, What's Right About Men. Hello, John.
Hello, Roger.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. And you?
I'm doing great, thanks. I'm excited because we have a guest today, and our guest is Pat Craven, who lives in the UK, and is. I want to just give a brief introduction to Pat and give you the phone number to call in, and then we'll get started, and we encourage people to call in with their questions, comments, concerns, and it's going to be a great show. So the number to call in is area code 347-205-9869. That's area code 347-205-9869. And our guest today, as I mentioned, is Pat Craven. And Pat is a qualified, let me give you a little bit of background on Pat. She's a qualified UK social worker and probation officer. In 1999, she created the Freedom Program for female survivors of domestic abuse. She's the author of Living with the Dominator, a book about male violence as it's geared toward women. In 2011, she wrote the companion book, The Freedom Program Home Study Course for Women, and she's also published Freedom's Flowers, which focuses on the effects of domestic abuse on children. And welcome to the show, Pat.
Oh, it's lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So why don't you start telling, give us, I know I gave a little bit of a background, but why don't you give us a bit more of what you'd like to share about who you are and how you came into this line of work and the importance of it.
I think it's, well, I don't want to sound as though I'm conceited, but I think it's very important. I think it's changed a lot of lives here in the UK. When I was a probation officer, for 15 years I worked with men who were on parole. You know, some of them had murdered, mainly women, as it happens. And I was also the chair of the local branch of the local women's refuge, and I thought I understood something about what they call domestic violence and abuse until I went to work on a perpetrator program with the probation service. And I sat in the middle of men, groups of men who murdered and attacked and raped women, and I listened to what they said. And I think the unusual thing about me, Roger and John, is that I actually listened to what they said. I heard what they said. And it shocked me, really. It made me feel, well, I realized several things. One was that I'd colluded with every violent and abusive man I'd ever met in the course of my work as a probation officer. The other was that the things I was hearing from these men were not apparently available to other professionals in the field. And can you bring me a drink, please? The third thing I realized was that the things I was learning from these men, the women they were with didn't know. And at that point, I became rather possessed with the desire to get the information I was getting from these men to the women who they were living with, who had no idea what was going on. I realized that if you are in an abusive relationship, you really feel it's all your fault. It's a big confusing mess that you don't understand it. And so I wrote the Freedom Program to show women what was happening. That was in 1999. Any questions as I'm going along, they're very helpful. So if you feel inspired to ask anything, John or Roger, please do, because it helps to focus my flow, as it were.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I have some questions already. I was just wanted to let you kind of get to a place where you were.
Well, I'm going to grab a drink of water,
yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Mm.
So
anyway,
so what were the men telling you, and what was it that the women didn't know?
Well, one of the things was, I can't say it without swearing, but one of the men told me
It's okay. It's Blog Talk Radio, so you can.
All
right,
then I'll tell you. Well, the first thing that really shocked me that I heard from men was, and believe me, the men I was working with were actually being very honest because they were surprising themselves about looking at their own thoughts. Yeah, this man said, "I've suddenly realised I've always said women are for CFCs. Do you know what that means? You know what those initials are? Can I say it?
Yeah.
Okay. It was cooking, fucking, and cleaning. This is the sort of thing I was hearing from these men. And I was 50 when I went to work in this course, and it really opened my eyes. I thought these men hate women. They're not distressed or insecure. They operate the way they do because they hate women. So much so that some of them murder women. And these are the things I was learning, and this is what I wanted to tell the world, and I've been telling the world ever since.
And
are you
and
with
what,
me?
And what was it that women didn't know?
They didn't know that men hated them. They didn't, and this is not all men, it's abusive men, it's very different. They didn't know. They thought that the men they were with, they make excuses to say, I'm sorry, or I'll only do it again, or you wound me up. They believed the excuses because they didn't understand what was motivating them. The other thing that, the main thing that I was getting from the men is that they were doing it in order to control women. They weren't angry or distressed. They were deliberately embarking on a series of tactics and maneuvers in order to control the women they had relationships with. It was fascinating, and it still is. I also run programs. The Freedom Program is a 12-week rolling program, or 11 weeks in the UK. For any woman who wants to go on it, there are hundreds of them. You know, they're in Ireland as well and in Gibraltar. But we also provide programs for men who want to be nicer men and have better relationships. And that is really interesting. We've just run one, actually, over the last 2 days. We finished it yesterday.
And Dawn and I were talking about this a little bit earlier before the show about some... John, what was it about a survey that you had given Pat for the men?
I was reading a lot of the comments, Pat, that had come.
I've got them in front of me.
Reproduced on your Twitter feed with the men giving their, you know, their experiences or kind of describing just how much they felt they benefited from the program.
Oh yeah. You see, what happens is we advertise on my website. We've got a men's program, and we start off. We say we're going to run a men's program. When we've got enough men, we'll put a date up. These are all free, by the way. We do them as a public service because we know that we can actually make a big difference in a family if the violence and abuse stops. So this is what we did. We advertised our men's program last year as a potential program. And when we had about 30 men, and their partners, by the way, if they're in a relationship, their partners come to and watch them, we put a date on, and then they all booked on again. We actually had 40 men booked on to the program, but that was about right because we know from experience that if we have 40 men who book on and their partners, only about 15 or 20 will come. And in this proved to be the case this time. We got 18 men and four partners came. So there were 22 people arrived for the course. And one of the important things about running these things is you cannot run them if you don't have enough men. We say 18 men is a good number because we don't tell them anything. They learn from each other. We just ask questions. And then they discuss them. Don't forget to ask me questions as I'm going along if you need to. Because I know this is very unusual stuff that a lot of your listeners are hearing. Would you like me to read some of the comments out the men made?
Yes, please.
Okay, it was lovely to hear from them because this is why we put this on. That's why we make such an effort. One says, "My God, what can I say? Life changing, attitude changing. I will change and I will carry on reading. I learned so much about myself." And again, interject, I'm going to read them all out to you, but if you want any questions as we're going along, I'll pause in between.
Before you do that, can I ask you, what kind of questions do you ask the men in order to get these responses?
Sure. What happens is it's a program about information. So, for example, we divide abusive tactics into 8 groups because of the tactics of power and control are in 8 groups. And again, on my website, we have a graphic of a character called the Dominator. Can people access the website, Roger, while we're talking? Can they see it? Can they access my website or not? Or are they just onto yours?
What's your web address? When you give out the address.
If you just Google www.freedomprogram.co.uk, they'll be able to find it.
And for the people in the United States, it's Freedom, and program is spelled P-R-O-G-R-A-M-M-E.
Yeah,
correct?
Well done. Yes, it's the English spelling.
.co.uk.
Yeah. And on that program, on that website, we have a graphic called The Dominator, and there's a picture of the cartoon of an abusive man, and there are 8 different kinds of abusive behavior he uses. And we divide each session into studying the kind of abuse that he uses in order to achieve a certain thing. So, for example, we say if he's going to use intimidation, he turns into the bully. And we have a little cartoon of a bully. And then the men are all in groups, and we give them the questions, and they answer the questions in the groups and talk to each other about it. So, for example, we say to them, can you make a list in the group of the tactics of the bully? How does he use his body language to intimidate? And how does he use every bit of his body, his fingers, toes and eyes, and his tone of voice? Is this making sense to you, Roger and John?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and so they, picture these men now. We've got 18 of them, so we've probably got 4 groups of 4, because there's a couple of 5 in there, and they've got a piece of paper each. Each group has 1 writer and 1 pad of paper, and they answer the questions, and they have a writer writing them down. And we time them. And so what you haven't got is a PowerPoint and a teacher telling them things. We just ask them questions and ask to discuss the answers. And then the next question is... Yeah,
so what kind of answers do you get?
We get... huffing and puffing. By the way, we make them play the role. We make them role play the bully in the answers. So we don't just say what kind of answers does he give. We say, now role play him. You become the bully and you say, I grind my teeth and I glare and shout and kick things. Okay, and that's how it works. The men aren't allowed to talk about themselves. It's a very important rule of the program. They're not allowed to talk about their own circumstances at all. They talk about the work and the dominator, but not themselves. And if anyone tries to talk about themselves, we stop them. And if they continue, we ask them to leave. And the reason we do that is we don't waste time arguing about... Most men who come in our program, most men who are abusive to women actually strongly believe women make them do it. They believe that they're being forced to use violence, and it's all the fault of the victim. And so if you don't let them talk about anything like that, you don't waste time arguing. Still making sense to you?
Yes.
Roger and John?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I have some questions about this, but can you, before you do that, that it relate to your workshop, can you identify the 8 types?
Yes. The graphic of the dominator is the bully. That is intimidation. And the examples of intimidation are slamming things, shouting, breathing heavily, glaring, smashing things, driving too fast with the family in the car. There are a few examples. The next one, if you think of it as a circle, so that the bully is in the top right-hand corner, and then you go down, the next example is the tactic of isolation, and we call that one the jailer. And the jailer stops his partner or his victim or the woman he's with from working, seeing friends. He times her when she goes out. He demands receipts. He sniffs her knickers if she's been out. Yes, he does. He turns up at a place of work and makes sure she gets the sack. Or he says things like when they first meet, babe, he says, I've got a lot of money. You don't have to work. I'll look after you. These are all tactics of the jailer. And some of them are very hard to spot because they seem to be very desirable behavior. That's the bully. So we've got intimidation and we've got isolation. And the next tactic we got is emotional abuse and coercion. We call that character the head worker. Now, he's very subtle. When he moves into a woman's life, he can convince her she's stupid, ugly, and fat within 2 days. They're good. Here's a story I heard from one of the women on the program. When she first met him and they settled in their house, he said to her one night, "Quick, call the police. There are burglars in the attic." And she did. And when the police came, he said, "Oh, no, she's a bit mad. There's no one there. Take no notice if she calls you again." That's a tactic he used, and eventually every agency in the area had labelled her as mad. And in fact, she did get sectioned. He tells me, for example, that I'm too fat, too thin, too small. I'm too stupid to do the job I'm doing. He denies saying things and he hides things and moves things. He tries to drive me mad. That is the head worker. And there'll be women, hopefully, listening to this who will recognise these tactics and hopefully will know that it wasn't them and they weren't going mad. They were being manipulated. Next tactic we have is the one of coercion and persuasion if we try and leave the relationship. We call him the persuader. And so if I've left my persuader now and I've got him to go out of the house, he turns up on the doorstep in tears, crying so badly that snot is running down his nose. In fact, he's on his knees. He's desperately distressed. He's making promises he'll never do it again. He's blaming. He'll get help with his anger or his unemployment or his ADHD or his OCDC or all the things he's blamed. And if I don't have him back, then he will start making threats. So he uses a mixture of coercion and threats to make sure that I have him back and accept his excuses and his apologies. By the way, all this I've learnt from men because they've told me. When he's back in the house, within 2 hours, minutes or days, he's just like he was before, only it's worse this time because he's gained ground and power. Any questions so far?
It's all very clear. You're halfway through the list, and kind of because I've read the book, I know what's coming, and I'm sure everybody else would like to hear what's coming too.
Off we go then. There's more yet. The next one going round is the liar. The liar lies about his abuse, and he uses a mixture of minimization, denial, and blame. Minimization is very powerful. There is one word that alters the context of everything you've said, and that is only. The only word is like magic. It changes everything. So if a man says, "I only broke her leg," that's what you'll hear. I only. You don't hear the broke her leg bit. "I only hit her a little bit. I only hit her when she's drunk. It was only a push. It was only a shove." The only word is huge. And it completely alters the meaning. And that's what we hear, minimization. Not only do they minimize, but they deny. "I never touched her. She's a drama queen. She's imagining things. She fell. She bruises easily." Who did that to you? "Someone must have broken into this house and beaten you up while I wasn't here. Because it certainly wasn't me." And then they blame. And they blame everything under the sun. They've got all these syndromes, they've got ADHD, OCD, CABB, BCDD, CFGG. They've got Gulf War syndrome. They've done too many tours of the Iraq or Iran or anything else. They blame alcohol. But what they don't blame is themselves. They never take responsibility. But abusive men actually believe, they really do believe, that women make them violent. They don't believe it's anything to do with them. I had a phone call a while back from a social worker who said to me, "I've got a man for your program." And I said, "Well, don't tell me anything about him. I'll take any bloke on the program I'll take Jack the Ripper, as long as he behaves himself." And then she said, "Oh, no, it's not like that." She said, he was very abused in his first relationship to the extent that he ended up serving a sentence from manslaughter.
Mm-hmm.
When he got out, because he didn't serve a very long sentence, because the English courts tend to accept ludicrous excuses for murdering women, as indeed all courts do. Those of us who are listening to the radio and listening to the news at the moment know that. When he got out of prison, he met another partner, and she had a baby, and the social worker said, I risk assessed him, but risk assessed the situation, but she seemed so nice, we thought there'd be no problem. And then one day, he just lost it and attacked her. And he's really sorry, and he'd like to come on your program. And I said, yeah, we're fine, we'll have him. But I said, is she on the Freedom Program for Women? Because that's a condition that we make, that the women mm-hmm. are being informed. And the social worker said, yeah. And I said, well, in that case, I want this man to read a book called Living with the Dominator before he comes. And she said, oh, he's not a dominator. He's a lovely man.
Or a sociopath.
What he was a liar, and he's a very good liar, and he'd met the social worker, who was incredibly naive, and she'd believed everything he'd told her. He told her that he was abused, and that's why he murdered this poor woman, and she believed him, and of course he attacked the next one he met.
Right,
so that is the liar. He's so good.
So Pat, earlier on, one of the first things you said when you were talking about, you know, your experience as a probation officer and what got you into this, you said when you had your realization, you recognized that you had all along been colluding
yes.
with these men. Is what you've just described from that social worker one of the examples of what you mean by colluding?
Absolutely, except I didn't do it deliberately and neither did she. We didn't
sure.
understand. She didn't understand and I didn't. Yeah. That's what happens, though, because people who deal with these characters are in the dark, just like I was. Yeah. There's a lot of very popular excuses around for murdering women. Defending myself is just one of them, particularly when one man was quoted, he did beat her to death, but he said he was fending her off. He was 16 stone and she was 8. I thought she was a burglar and murdered her. I've heard that about 10 times over the last year. That's very common.
So Oscar Pistorius isn't unusual.
Yes, but I wasn't going to quote him, but yes, he's not unusual. When I first heard that broadcast, I thought, oh, not another one, because I'd heard it so often. I think it's in the
right.
book, actually. So that's the liar, and that's why we don't let the men talk about themselves on the programme, because we get endless liars and arguments. It works a treat. They just have to talk about the dominator. He's still going round, of course. There's more. There's the bad father. And this is the one that uses the children to abuse his wife, partner, girlfriend. And he doesn't necessarily have to be the father of the children he's using. So what he'll do, for example, he'll turn the children against their mother. So little things like if she says, Do you want to eat this dinner, children? He'll say, they don't have to eat that swill. I'll take them to McDonald's. Or go to bed, children. He'll say, no, they leave them to stay up. They're going to watch TV with me. And he joins in laughter at their mother. He gangs up. He contradicts everything she says and then says to her, you're a bad mother. You can't parent these children because they're not doing anything you've told them to do. And he set it up so they don't. He uses violence in front of the children, and he chases his ex-wife partner through the courts to get custody and access to the children when she's left him to go into a refuge. And there's a lovely quote right at the end of our... I'll just interject here, because this is a lovely quote from one of the men who did our program yesterday. And it said... I blamed the social workers for removing my children. I blamed her for having me thrown out. I blamed the police for arresting me. I blamed her friends for putting ideas into her head. I blamed her family because they never liked me. I blamed everyone else except the person whose fault it was, me. And there's another one about residency as well. I'll find him. Isn't it funny how you can never find things when you're looking for them? Anyway, I will find it. But that is the bad father. And one of the things the bad father does, and I think it's quite a dangerous and widespread thing. I'll stop looking at this list and carry on talking. He uses violence, and the police are called. And the social services are pretty much the same in America as England. And say, for example, he beats me up now, and the police are called. And I'm told that if I have him back, I'm going to have the children removed, because, and quite rightly, you know, I mean, it's not safe in that house with him there. So I say to him, you can't come back. And then he turns into the persuader, and he's weeping and wailing on the step. And he persuades me, because he's very powerful, to have him back. And then the children are removed. And that was his plan all along. Because then he can say to me, you can't even keep your own children. The bad father's extreme. And very widely known, and causes a great deal of distress. In fact, he ruins children's lives. We're not round yet. We've got the king of the castle now. He does male privilege, and this is something that we women find very hard to spot because it's very common. He treats me like a servant and a slave, and he expects me to wait on him hand and foot. He drops his dirty washing on the floor and expects me to pick it up. He expects receipts if I go out. He doesn't tell me how much he earns. He comes and goes as he pleases. We call him the king of the castle. If he is persuaded to cook a meal now and then, he'll burn everything and trash the kitchen. And we think, oh, bless him, you know, he can't do it. Men can't do that. But it's a tactic. He's done it deliberately. He can't find things, he doesn't know where his shirt is or his socks, because he expects me to fold them up and put them away and know where they all are. It's extremely effective, and what it means is that I will be waiting on him hand and foot and be treated as a servant, without any wages, of course. And the final one, and the worst one of the lot, is the sexual controller. Because each one of these characters is a session on the programme. If it's a woman's program, it's once a week. And if it's the men's program, we do it one after another in 2 days. The 2 days is lovely. It's very powerful because the impact is much higher. It's much better to work with men over 2 days because it's more condensed. They can't go out into society and have their beliefs reinforced because they're all under one roof altogether for 2 days. So the last one is the sexual controller. It's interesting, really, because most women don't talk about the sexual abuse they've received. They can't. So, if I went to a refuge and I was able to talk to the counsellor there, I believe you call refuges shelters in America. So
yeah,
if I went
correct.
To a refuge or a shelter and talked to the counsellor, I could tell her about the violence and the emotional abuse and the financial abuse and the way he'd driven me mad. But what I couldn't tell her is the way he'd had all his friends in to have sex with me, or he'd prostituted me, or he'd made me have sex with the dog and filmed it. I couldn't tell her that because I couldn't bear the look on her face, so I never told anyone. When we do the Freedom Program, we talk about it in the session, and most women who do that say, wow, I'm not the only one this has happened to, so therefore, just maybe, it's not my fault. And the interesting thing about it, when we do the sessions with the men, a lot of them, I don't think they've actually realised it is abuse. They think it's just normal. So, there are the tactics. Any more questions as they're going along?
Well, of course, there's a ton of questions. I think for me, where I'd like to go back, kind of circle around back to, is the men's program. And you have a group of, and correct me if I'm wrong, but is this group when you have these gatherings for 2 days, there's no women in the group, right?
Yeah, there are. But then the men, say, for example, we've got our 22 people I told you about, 18 men and four partners came with them. We want men in relationships to come with a partner. So you've got your groups of men all sitting around with their pieces of paper discussing. And you, in this case, you had one group of their partners in a separate group all answering the same questions.
Okay. So I guess my first question in regard to that is, are you taking these men, just like plucking them out of an environment where they've been abusive and bringing them into a room to go through this program for 2 days? Or are these men who have done some kind of therapy work on them or work on themselves to get them to a place where they can then show up to do this work?
I don't think so, because first of all, we're unique. We don't want to know who you are. Most programs have quite an intensive assessment process, and many of them are only take men who've been convicted. I think we are more of a prevention program because the people who come to us aren't convicted and they aren't coming from the courts, really. They're just voluntary. They've come because they want to come and they want to learn, they want to change. Oh, and there is a rather important prod. Their partners want them to come. The four women who came with those men, they brought them.
Well, that's kind of how it is in any kind of thing. So,
what the partners said was to them, we've read the Freedom Program, we've read the book, we know what you're doing, and we want to leave you. And the men have said, oh, please don't leave me, I beg you. And they said, okay, if you want to change your behavior, we'll reconsider. And the men said, yeah, I'll do anything, I'll go and see the doctor. And they went, no, we're going to the Freedom Program with Pat Craven. And that's why they're there, because it's the last chance for them.
I guess what I'm... So my next question in that regard is what kind of follow-up do you have with these men 6 months, a year, 2 years down the road,
yeah,
or do you?
We do when they want to have. I mean, some of the we've had a lot of couples who've stayed together, I mean, permanently because of this, and they have volunteered to keep in touch and give us feedback. We don't measure success. I mean, it's lovely to read what the men here have written, but that's not our measure of success. Our measure of success is what the women tell us. And so if, on the whole, over the years, we've had 6 out of 10 men do change according to their partners, and they've stayed together, or four haven't, and the women know they're not going to, so they've said that's an outcome for them. So we've had, and the women stay. I mean, they stay on the Freedom Program, they stay with us, and a lot of couples have stayed in touch with us. I remember one couple telling, he told me, and she was agreeing with him, that they self-policed. So if he started to use abusive behaviour, then he was saying, oh, hang on a minute, no, that was the head worker, or that was the bully. And because it's so gentle and fun to do, I think they learn far more than they would have done. I mean, what they say is we're expected to come in and be shouted at. We don't shout. We just say, hey, just chat about this.
Right.
See how you
let me give out the number for people who are interested in calling in. The number is 347-205-9865. That's area code 347-205-9869. Oh. I see John dropped off the line. Technology is great when it works. So,
well, I'm glad you still got me.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, because I read through your book a couple of times, and I find it very there's things I find kind of like appalling and sickening in regard to behavior of men. There's some things that I have disagreements with in some perspectives, and that's probably because of where I come from and my background. But one of the things that I wanted to ask you was, in a couple of places in the book, you identified the 8 types of dominator characteristics. And at 2 different places in the book, let me see if I can find it. You said that these tactics can be used in same-sex relationships. Therefore, the dominator can be an abusive gay man and abusive gay women.
Yeah.
But I guess my question is, can you share with us why you make no mention of abuse of heterosexual women?
Right, because it's a different mindset. I mean, certainly I'm not saying that there aren't abusive heterosexual women around, but what I think the difference is I don't think it's gender-based. I think there are beliefs about abusive behavior, such as it works, and so on, that they use. But the fundamental premise of the Freedom Program is it's gender-based. It's based on misogyny, which has been around for centuries. I mean, you've read all that I've said about that in the book as well, right? Mm-hmm. Since the ancient Greeks. Traditionally, and there's so much. I mean, you keep your ear to the ground, you listen to what people are saying, you know how much hatred of women there is around in the world, and it always has been. And men who abuse women are motivated by that mainly, and then, then they've got another pile of beliefs on top. And that's why, when you're dealing with abusive women, it doesn't work using this. But you can use it, but what you've got to do is focus on the behavior rather than the beliefs or the cultural element of it. Because women being abusive, it's actually becoming more culturally acceptable now, isn't it? Because of what they call in England, they used to a few years ago, call the ladette culture, where women get pissed and go out and beat other women up or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm. are you seeing more as a result of that kind of behavior? Are you seeing more abuse going the opposite way these days?
No, I'm not. I think it's very popular to say that there are a lot of men abused by women, but if you bring it down to the bottom line, Roger, the reason I wrote the Freedom Program initially, with a woman was being murdered in the UK. I don't know what the stats are in America. In the UK, a woman was murdered every 3 days by an abusive partner, and that's still happening now. It's not the same with men. So there isn't the desperate need to try and save lives. And I think we've got something like 130 children are murdered a year, mainly by men, in revenge attacks for women leaving them. Mm-hmm. But I will say, and I think it's very important for people to know this, the Freedom Program is not a man-hating program. Mm-hmm. We're not loads of men run the Freedom Program, dozens of them, hundreds of them across the UK, because they come on my training and they learn how to run it. And they run it with other men, and they run it with women too, because we run it with love. It's not saying you're all bastards. We think it can be nicer. This is the behavior you want, not the person. We're not having to go at the person.
No, I the reason that when you said you're not all bastards, I know a woman that told me one day, she said that my coworkers and I have decided that all men are dumb. And I've tried to get her on the program to defend that position, and she's been reluctant to do that. But no, I think
when you tend to say something off the cuff and rather silly, you find it difficult to defend on a radio station. I know I would.
I think one question that I have, another question actually, is, you know, I think that who was in writing the book, The Dominator, Living with the Dominator, there's two questions I have with regard to that. Number one is, I think I know the answer, but I want to hear it from you, is who was your target audience in regard to writing that book? And number two, you use the terminology we and us quite a lot
all
in
the
book.
All the time,
So I'd like to know,
that.
I'd like to know why, who your target audience was in writing the book, and why you chose to write in the style that you did, using we and us.
Good. It's completely deliberate and planned. Because one of the things that happens, and this is something that women do to each other, and we say, these women. And there's almost a belief, particularly in professionals, that there's the women who are in abusive relationships somehow subhuman. They're different from us. They're those women. And I wanted to break down that barrier. Mm-hmm. I don't want any woman to feel as though she's judged. So we're all together in this. And all women have experienced sexism of one or abuse of one kind or another in their lives, whether they know it or not. So it's a absolutely inclusive, universal we and us. My target audience is for women who don't even know what's happening to them. Do you know what? A lot of women come on our Freedom Program and they're sent by social care, because if they don't come, they're going to have their children removed. And when they arrive on our groups, they really don't know why they're there, because no one's able to be explained to them that if they stay with this man they're with, they're going to lose their kids, mainly because he's completely controlling their minds. And what we're trying to do is unpick that control. The only person that can save those children is the mother. And this is what we're doing. We're trying to save the lives of children by empowering their mothers. And that's who we're aiming to do. That's where we're going.
Yeah. I mean, I think that...
Sorry, Roger, I didn't know whether you were aware that I'm back. I only missed about 45 seconds when Skype threw me off.
And, welcome back.
I have been listening to pretty much everything. And I wanted to go back to something quite stark that you said, Pat, when you were talking about the sexual controller.
Yeah.
And some very unpleasant and very weird behaviours that he was getting women...
Except they're not that weird and they're not unusual.
Mm. Well, okay, so... what you said about... was that the men concerned thought these behaviours were normal.
Yeah, I've got a lovely story to illustrate that.
Do tell the story, but kind of at the end of the story, where do people get such ideas from to think
about? How about
normal?
Pornography on the internet? And not just the internet, there's always been pornography. And there's always been objectification of women. But this particular story was rather lovely. We had a man on the program who was blind. He couldn't see, really blind. And he used to come in with a stick every week. And he was very good on the program because he ensured that there was plenty of discussion, because he kept saying, they're useless, they're sitting quietly, I'm not learning anything. So he kept everyone going. We did the sexual controller. And then he said to all the other men in the program, I've really learned something today. And he said, I've had sex with my wife when she's asleep for years. And I didn't realize it was rape. Because he just thought that was a perfectly normal thing to do. And they, in their minds, it's really hard to explain, but nobody ever does anything they believe to be wrong. So when all these unpleasant practices are indulge, they see it as sex games, or on one level they do, on another level they know that they're doing it to be abusive. It's complicated. Why don't they all do it? Some do, some don't. It's a spectrum.
So when you're talking to them in the men's program, or when they're talking to each other, at what point or in what way do they come to the realization that what they're doing maybe isn't as normal as they thought it was, and at what point do they come to the conclusion that maybe it was right?
I don't know. I mean, normally when you're watching them, they seem to be getting quite enlightened by the first lunchtime of the first day. Don't forget, it's only 2 days. But I think it's like an onion for them. They peel a bit of a layer off. One man said to me once, I mean, I allow them to talk about themselves after the program, and clearly they give their feedback. One man said to me, he said, when I first came on this program, I looked at that dominator and I thought, I'm not any of those things. But as the program progressed, he said, I realized I'd done all the things on the list, so therefore I must be a dominator. So I think somebody said, showed me a reflection of myself. I never saw myself as one of those men. Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, here we are. Many thanks for the program. You were very honest and didn't hold back on the impact of my behaviour. It was a hard thing to be faced with, very upsetting, but nothing compared to what I put my wife through. It was a shock when I saw images of me reflected back. Another man said to me once, thank you for holding a mirror up for me to show me what I am or was.
Yeah.
Did that answer your questions? Or did it engender a whole lot more?
Both, I think.
I think, good. This is what we want. Yeah.
Well, it may be that it's a little too complicated, might deserve another show on its own, but it's this question of the sort of what you're describing that's a sort of an internal conflict and denial of people who kind of think that it's right and yet at some level know that it's not. And
yeah, I think that's
they
right.
Think they're
yeah.
not dominators, but at another level they do. And I'm kind of curious as to how that works.
I think the thing to do is keep it simple. I mean, it'd be very easy, and most of the men who come to us, I have to say, have been to see what we call a bollocksologist at some time, and they've been analysed and psychoanalysed and therapised, and it means nothing to them. Because we keep it simple and we say, look, basically, these are the actions. What does this character believe which allows it to do it? And the point is, it's social. So going back to our questions about the bully, what does the bully do to intimidate? What does he believe about violence and real men and the status of women compared to men? And then you could say, well, if you get some answer to that, you'll say he believes that men are superior to women. Violence is desirable in a man. I mean, real men use violence to get it their own way. So where does he get these beliefs from? Well, action films, music. Have you ever heard of a song called Delilah in the States, Roger, by Tom Jones?
When did that come out?
100 years ago.
Yes.
that I probably have.
Late 60s, well, about, 70s, I think.
Yeah. It's all about a man who murders his wife and then blames her. And the chorus is, why, Delilah, my, Delilah.
I heard the song. I never listened to the lyrics.
Well, we don't, but we do. The songs like this, which justify murdering women, are subliminally listened to, and we are all influenced by society. We all live here, and we all get the messages. It's just that some of us react more to the messages we're getting than others. So that's the next question. Where does the bully get his beliefs from? And we suggest that they consider music and media and laws. How about laws? You know, violence against women has been traditionally not punished. And so on and so forth. And then we say, and again, this is all played in role, by the way, in the group. So they're still in the role of the dominator. So they're saying, I'm the bully, I believe this. And this is where I get my beliefs from. I was in the army. I was taught that bullying was effective because it breaks people down. And then they do what you tell them. And then you say, and then we say, go into the role of a woman now and say how you're affected by all this.
You know, one of the questions that I have, or for you, or my observation input, whatever you want to call it, is regarding the bully. And
yeah.
In the book, you say, quote, he's thinking clearly, and he's completely in control of his emotions.
Oh, yeah.
And he's therefore not angry.
No, he's not angry.
And my and maybe this is two sides of the same coin, but I would argue that the bully has no idea what emotions even are, that he has no idea of what his emotions are, and that there is a pool of anger that's buried so deep within him that he has no idea how to get to, and that there is like, it's like when you put anything under pressure, eventually, there's going to be some way that it has to be released. Right?
Why is he angry? What's he got to be angry about?
I think it's one of the things that I look at, and from my perspective, from where I come from what I've learned from my experience in life, that, for example, I grew up with an abusive father, okay? And I remember, what was it, a year or so ago, I called my mom and I said, when I was young, I used to wish that I was a horse because horses were treated better than people. I grew up not knowing what my emotions were. I grew up cut off from my own feelings, and I had a huge amount of anger. Okay, it's taken me a lot of years and a lot of work to, you know, like you said earlier about peeling back that onion.
Yeah.
So I that's kind of been my experience and my training in psychology, you know, and seeing other people and all of that. That's where I'm coming from. But my point is that I see that I don't disagree with what you're saying, because I believe that the bully has gotten to a place, because he's so emotionally dead, that he's become great at what he knows how to do best, which is bully other people. But on the flip side,
can I ask you something, Roger?
Sure.
Are you a bully?
I think I probably have been in my life from time to time. Absolutely. Yeah.
Did you bully your partner, your wife, your kids? And I'm not particularly trying to psychoanalyze you. I'm trying to find out if you were right, you would have been.
I think that I was bullied hugely, and on the flip side, I think that I was definitely headed down that track.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like I've always been looked after, you can call it whatever you want, by a guardian angel or whatever it is that you want. But I was heading down that track, and somebody stepped into my life that changed my life 180 degrees. And so yeah, I mean, there was definitely an intersection that I got to that was like,
yeah,
okay, if I continue down this road, and I knew it, if I continue down this road, I am going to raise my daughter the way that I was raised. I'm going to be just like my father. And I got to that place, it's like, I can't go down that road. I have to go down this other road. And this other road was getting myself into therapy and starting to look at it and see what was going on with me and the way I was raised and all of those deep issues that I had. So yeah, I mean, it was there for sure.
Well, it's, first of all, you made me want to cry when you said that about the horse. That's just so sad. What I'm going back to is when a man comes in the house and starts slamming and banging, And women say to me, he's really angry. I'm going to say, well, what on earth has that man got to be angry about when he's walked in the door like that? It's a tactic. He's not angry. And
the men
on the program recognize that, by the way. They recognize that they're not angry. Because we're only there to help them.
No. That's why I say I agree with what you're saying, but I also think that there's a flip side to that coin that goes much, much deeper. And I know, and I get, I would imagine, just from what you're telling us, in the way that you've set up your program and everything, that's not what you're about. You're about getting these abuse victims out of the situations that they're in.
Or to change the situation. That's why we work with the men. Because a lot of the time, that's what the women want us to do, because they love them. And they love them. They want them to stop being abusive, and they want to stay with them, and they want to keep their kids happy and safe. And that's what we're about, really. And it works.
That's great.
Yeah. The real answer to your question comes back in the chapter on the liar, which is actually quite hard to explain. And that's the rules of the game. And that's where violence comes in. And it seems to the perpetrator that he's lost his temper and he's using violence because he's angry. But if you analyse it, he's not angry. And the rules of the game is a fascinating graphic about what happens when an abuser decides to use violence. I don't know if you want to go into that on this. Good God, look at the time.
I know, we only have about 4 minutes left.
Yeah. But we can do the rules of the game and the assault another time, if you like, because, I mean, that's a whole session on its own.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm loving this. I'm loving talking to you all.
Have you got any questions?
Have you got any people phoning in before I go?
I don't. Let's see. Let's ask our producer if we have any. No questions so far.
I think we might have to wait.
I think we're so good that we've covered them all.
We might have to wait till next time anyway, just so that we can kind of close off in our slot. I do look forward to taking this conversation further. I think you've opened up something that's really quite fascinating, Pat. And,
I've loved it. I'm so glad you asked me to come. But I hope you all realise that we on the Freedom Programme, we love men. We want to help them, and the men who walk through the door in that room when they come, they realise that.
That's awesome.
Are we signing off now, darlings?
No, we're not done. We have a couple of more minutes. Go ahead.
I'd like to read some more of your feedback to you from the men. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm pleased and honoured to be allowed to do this program. It's been a great experience, and I've learned a lot about my manners. Thank you very much for the brave lady, Chris, who was superb. That's Chris who ran the program. I'm happy I attended the course. I learned a lot how I impact on my children and how that shapes their lives. Looking at this was distressing. I did not know how painful emotionally it could be for them. I will be withdrawing my application for residency of the children from the court. Their mother is an excellent mother, and I will support her from now on. That's one of the best ones we had.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's powerful.
Isn't it? Thank you both for having me.
It's been a pleasure, and we will continue. We'll continue the conversation. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you. Good night, folks. Good night, America. Goodbye.
Bye.
So put the phone down now, yeah?
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. So, Roger, we've got lots of follow-up to do. Hello? Hello, Roger, are you still there?
Hello. Sorry, I had to mute myself for some background noise.
Anyway, I think we're about out of time, John. So it was a great show, and we'll have Pat back. And everybody have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye, John.
Bye, Roger.